I think in business, it's such an important personality trait to have, at least to have like the on and off switch of being poker face to some degree. And in that scenario, in the arbitration scenario with Derek Jeter, one last thing before I switch it over to Alex Rodriguez, because his story is a little bit funny. And this is where he kind of talks about how he learned from Derek. But George Steinbrenner, the Yankee owner at the time, Derek Jeter and him were like this.
Oh, yeah. But
during this time, this is a very smart business move on George Steinbrenner. And Derek pointed this out, which is pretty cool how he already has a knack of business. But George Steinbrenner was not in those meetings in person at arbitration. He made sure to stay the hell away and let the other guys be the bad guys in a way. That way he could have that good relationship with Derek. So I found that kind of fascinating how the business strategy was always there.
He wasn't in the arbitration room. He kept the distance when it came to that.
Kind of like how Billy Beane was with the A's at the beginning, and then he started getting more like up close with the team and stuff.
Three balls, two strikes, pressure's on. This is where we discuss real estate, property improvement, and business. Together, we'll strategize on how to win. Welcome to the Full Count.
All right, welcome back to Full Count. We have a great show here today. I got Kurt Heyer, the professional baseball player. We've had him on in the past. And today we're going to talk about baseball, but more so on the business side of things, like Derek Jeter. You know, he was on the podcast with Alex Rodriguez, and they were talking about how Derek Jeter's preparation on the field, you know, helped him do really well in the business aspect of things outside of baseball now that he's retired. Something that was really cool that Derek Jeter mentioned, and I think you might find this pretty beneficial, in terms of contracts, when he went to arbitration with the Yankees.
It was harsh, I think, arbitration. You ever go to arbitration?
But I heard it's nasty.
Yeah, I mean, going through arbitration for the first time is hard. You're actually sitting in a room looking across the executives from your organization, and they're telling you basically how you're no good.
The Yankees, the guys that are making all the business decisions, had Derek Jeter sit down with them, right? And Derek thought he was like loved by everybody. Fans, the business aspect, and he ended up realizing that all these business guys had a lot of tough things to say about him, where it kind of brought his ego down and he felt really bad about it. And I wanted to know with you, when you're playing baseball, is that something you think about when you're doing these contracts, or do you already see it happen up front when you're in the process of like signing a deal? Because I'll tell you his story right now, but I want to know from like your perspective, if you've ever felt that like cutthroatness when it comes to your money and things like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, I've never been part of an arbitration deal or anything like that. I was like going into my arbitration year, but I got released before that happened. But I mean, mentally you feel like nothing could hurt you. Nothing could happen. Like you're, you know, on top of the world, and you know, you feel like everybody's in your corner. You feel like, you know, all your teammates love you. Your coaching staff loves you, but you don't know what's going on in the front office. You don't know what they're thinking. They could be totally thinking the complete opposite. And you know, it's happened to me a few times where I thought like, I'm good. Like my job is safe. Like I got nothing to worry about. It happened to me in indie ball when I was with the Milwaukee Milkmen, where the owner actually came up to me and said, "Hey, listen, we're trying to build a culture here. You know, we love you. Like you're a fan favorite. You know,
that's nice.
Yeah. You bring a lot of professionalism to this organization, and you know, we want you to come back." And at the time, this is kind of where like I thought my career was kind of going, like, you know, oh, I could see myself finishing up here. You know, I thought I was maybe going to be done after a couple more years. Luckily I'm still playing, but and then the off season rolls around and the new coach calls me up and goes, "Hey, listen, we can't bring you back." I'm like, "Why? What's up?" And it's all logistics. They're only allowed a certain amount of spots. You know, back in indie ball, it's like, they would have, if you had enough time, you'd be considered a veteran. So if you got too much experience, that's almost sometimes a bad thing. So then they say, "Hey, we only have 5 veteran spots and we can't use that one on you. So you can't come." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So,
but that doesn't make sense though. I mean, I'm sure you thought like, this doesn't make any sense when the owner just approached me and told me all this, you know, amazing comments about how great I am. And then the coach comes over and tells me something different.
And I was also, actually pitching for Team USA, like in an exhibition game at the time. Like, and I was thinking like, oh man, everything's going great. I just got to pitch for my country a little bit.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
I was on cloud nine, and, and then you feel like, wow, I guess it doesn't pay to be, you know, like have a lot of, experience under your belt, which is a little bit different than what Derek Jeter was going to through. But, you know, in terms of like thinking that you're secure in your job, I can kind of relate to some degree. But yeah, I mean, no job is ever safe. It's a business. Like, I think we talked about it in our last podcast. It's a business, right. You know, nothing, you know, new guys are coming in every year, like we said, and
you're just a number sometimes. Yeah, in reality,
you're just a number on a whiteboard or right. on a computer. So, you know, they probably punch in to some algorithm like, does Kurt Heyer, you know, fit the mold here? Does he bring the stats and the numbers to this organization? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Who else can we get? So, people are easily replaced. You know, it's not every day like we're. Or it's not every other sport where it's like football, basketball, like where you can have a Tom Brady or LeBron James and they could just stay there forever. Yeah.
Right. You know, well, I think that's kind of what Derek was equating too. Cause like you said, you had all this experience and in a way it didn't benefit you. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, he went into arbitration in his career when he was like towards the end almost.
Yeah.
And so he had a ton of this experience and he had this legacy, but even then they had a lot of bad things to say in a way and he felt really bad. But what I noticed about Derek Jeter, which is a bit different from most Major League Baseball players, as far as like the popular ones, is he mm-hmm. always has a poker face.
So if you don't have thick skin, you can't go through it. Because there have been players that, you know, you get scarred by the organization. Mm-hmm. You never recover from it. I got scarred, sure. right? But I was just able to hide it a little bit better. But yeah, so when you go through that situation, that is a harsh lesson in business.
Like he's very calm. Doesn't get too excited, doesn't get too upset. Would you say you have that same type of personality?
That's the one thing I always respected Derek Jeter about was mm-hmm. he was always quiet. He was never searching for like the limelight. It just, you know, he kind of let his actions speak for themselves.
Right.
He's not like a rah-rah cheerleader, like let's go kind of guy. Yeah. It's more like
can think he's a little boring though sometimes too.
Hey. To me, he was the face of baseball for a long time, you know, because he was just clean cut. Like you couldn't find anything wrong with this guy. Like he was almost too perfect. Right. You know, it's not like he had a gambling problem or he was like, you know, taking steroids or anything like that. You know, he just straight across the board, like in terms of like just having a clean career. Mm-hmm. You know, there's very few guys that can say that they did that, especially in the Yankees uniform. Like that's very hard to do. And he was doing it. Like in a tough few decades of baseball, like in the right. 90s and then, you know, early 2000s where, you know, steroids were still like, you know, being used and pitching was pretty dominant too. I just like the way he carried himself. Cause like the one thing I think about while I'm pitching is I don't want anybody to think anybody's getting to me. So like, you can hit a 400 foot bomb, but you'd never be able to tell that I just did that on my face.
Right.
But, and I could strike out the side. You wouldn't even know the difference. So,
right. I think in business, it's such an important personality trait to have, at least mm-hmm. to have like the on and off switch of being poker face to some degree. And in that scenario, in the arbitration scenario with Derek Jeter, one last thing before I switch it over to Alex Rodriguez, because his story is a little bit funny. And mm-hmm. this is where he kind of talks about how he learned from Derek. But George Steinbrenner, the mm-hmm. Yankee owner at the time, Derek Jeter and him were like this.
Oh, yeah. But
during this time, this is very smart business move on George Steinbrenner. And Derek pointed this out, which is pretty cool how he already has a knack of business. But George Steinbrenner was not in those meetings in person at arbitration. He made sure to stay the hell away and mm-hmm. let the other guys be the bad guys in a way. That way he could have that good relationship with Derek. So I found that kind of fascinating how the business strategy was always there.
He wasn't in the arbitration room. He kept the distance when it came to that.
Kind of like how Billy Bean was with the A's at the beginning, and then he started getting more like up close with the team and stuff. I mean,
like be the good guy and be cool with the players directly.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's that's the one thing that, you know, every player, especially like in the big leagues, wants, knowing that you have the owner like in your corner, like, and knowing that like he's pretty much got like he's got a lot of pull. So, you know, I give a lot of props for Steinbrenner doing that. I mean, mm-hmm. that was very smart, like you said, on his part.
Yeah, pretty good.
And it, I mean, geez, it paid off for them pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Yankee tradition is to be clean cut. Just going back to what you were saying, does the owners have a lot of say in that?
I like to think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the owner, obviously, you know, he's the owner of the team, but like, you have to understand, like, some of these guys that are on the board, like, they, to them, it's like, all right, what about revenue? What can we do for like, what's the right direction for our organization? Like, do we need to get new personnel? Do we need to get new coaches, players? You know, everything's about projections and numbers to them. So like, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what happens behind those closed doors, but mm-hmm. I would like to assume, like, you know, the owner does have some say. I'm not sure who has the final say, but
it seems like there's still a lot of say right now, because like on the Yankees, I know you're kind of a fan of the Yankees. Mm-hmm. So am I, but I mean, for example, Marcus Stroman, we'll get into him in a minute, but people were afraid that maybe he couldn't wear the do-rag anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got
Alex Verdugo with the big beard. He mm-hmm. obviously shaved it down. And I don't know if you saw this. I think it was it just came out yesterday or a few days ago, but on Easter Sunday, I posted on Full Count Podcast how he had three chains on.
Yeah.
With the crucifix, which was, I mean, it's a lot of bling. I think it's excessive, obviously, but it's kind of cool because that's his personality. He's like that. He's really out there with that. But they just said that the Yankees are now allowing him, specifically Aaron Boone, the manager, only one chain he can wear now, which I thought was a bit funny.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to like that whole golf thing where you say, like, if you look good, you play good kind of thing. So,
but you don't think people look good with three chains? Big old bulky chain?
I don't know how people play and run in that, but
I know, you know, it's heavy.
You know, I've got teammates that wear earrings and stuff, and they're told to take them out. Or, you know, to me, it's like, if you want to do it, I don't think that should. I think, you know, you got to be clean cut, presentable. You know, obviously, you know, it's like I said, we were talking about culture. Like, this is the New York Yankees here. This is not like, you know, the bottom feeder team where like, oh, anything goes. You know,
as
long as you show up on time and, you know, get us hits, we're fine. But like, you know, I think some players who go into the Yankees organization, they should already have a clear idea. Like, all right, I have to be clean cut. I know I shouldn't try to push the envelope too much. If I'm allowed to get a chain, then I'll take what I can get. But at the same time, I feel like the fans don't really care. I mean, geez, the fans look decked out too in bling. So it's like, you know, it's not like the crowds are clean cut shaven. So,
you guys do a little bit. Yeah. That makes some sense. Cause I mean, Derek was obviously that role model of
icon
of what a player should look.
It's funny. Like for a while, I always thought like the Yankees had to wear pants up the entire time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, Derek Jeter never really wore pants up. Like, I was like, huh, that's so weird. Like, okay, I guess that makes sense. Because there are a few teams where I played with in the last few years where everybody had to wear pinstripes or pants up, no beard, no nothing. And I think that was actually in Mexico City. Nobody's allowed to wear pants down. Like, it's almost, they're like the New York Yankees of that, of that league. So
interesting. Mexico City.
But I think, you know, it makes sense. You know, they've won 27 championships.
Right. So they're doing something right.
Yes. The formula works. I mean, even right now, like they're missing Gerrit Cole and they're winning games. Like, you know, I would have thought like, all right, crap, they're going to really have to do something here to like kind of pick up the slack. I mean, obviously Cole is only one pitcher, but like, you know, he's a big presence in the pitching staff. So
for sure.
The fact that they're able to, you know, do what they're doing right now to start off the season is pretty good.
Right. No, totally. You know, what I found funny too was in the discussion with Alex and Derek was, Alex was saying that back in 2004, the owner of the Rangers invited Alex over to his house for dinner and drinks or whatever. And this is kind of the motto going back to Derek Jeter about always being prepared. And he's always that poker face guy. I feel like he's always one step ahead of most people, maybe not always in business, but in some cases he is. But, you know, Alex was that guy that was the partier. He was kind of the opposite of Derek, but basically,
yeah, he was going to Miami.
Right.
He was going to Miami. That's a totally different area than Michigan.
Right. And I mean, you know, the personalities are so different too. But Alex was saying that the owner said, hey, we have a money problem here, essentially. We need to trade you and give me three teams that you want to go to, and I'll do my best to get you there. And there was more conversation to it.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. In business, when you're having a discussion like that, something life-changing for Alex Rodriguez at the time when he was younger is, one, you want to go to a setting where it's a bit more neutral, right? He's now in the owner's territory. Not only that, number two, he already gave him, he was saying he was already in three vodkas. And at that time, he didn't drink as often, supposedly. So those are two main components where I think if like a Derek Jeter probably wouldn't have put himself in that situation where he may have not given him the answer right away. And he probably wouldn't have been drinking alcohol if they're going to be talking about business. So that was a good move on the older guy with the owner. But at the end of the day, it ended up working out because he got the biggest contract at the time a couple years later.
Oh, yeah.
So things worked out. Nothing wrong, you know, necessarily happened. But I think it could have been a little bit different for Alex because when he got traded to the Yankees, he ended up at third base rather than another team at shortstop and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I mean, but this is also, they were also talking about how social media wasn't big back then.
Right.
So, like, everything was kind of, like, under the radar. Nobody really knew anything what was going on. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like now where people know exactly where everybody is. Like, oh, Shohei Ohtani's at the airport. Oh,
yeah.
Take pictures of him. Like, if A-Rod was playing in today's game, they would probably have a guy, like, follow him around knowing, like, oh, he's going into the owner's house. Like, so I mean, yeah, it worked out for him. It worked out. I mean, I think, yeah, he could have probably handled it a little bit differently, especially being a young guy. Like, he probably should have talked to his agent, like, hey, like,
Man, he had him 1-on-1
in the guy's house. Like, is that okay?
Yeah,
he's like, and you didn't tell me. He basically negotiated his own contract, basically.
I think it would have been a smart move. I mean, obviously, it's easy for us to talk about it because we're not there. But I think what would have been smart for him to do too is like, hey, thank you for this information. Let's talk about it another day with my agent, like you kind of just said, and go from there rather than kind of cut to the chase and, you know, do the deal there. But
I was going to say, because the owner basically showed his entire hand, like, hey, this is what we're doing. And then he can go back to his agent and be like, hey, he just gave me some stuff to work with. What can we do with this? And he's like, oh, okay.
And that's why you need an agent for sure to be there to kind of, you know, write things down and strategize for you rather than doing things on the fly. So, I thought that was cool. I just wanted to share that with people watching, you know, pressure moments in life, how you can learn from the sport. So I know, like, you being a pitcher, you're always under pressure, and I'm sure now you can apply to business and life in general, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, you take those athletic attributes that you have on the field and, you know, that teamwork mentality, like, oh, I love being part of a team. I want to win, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
You can definitely use that to your advantage when you move on to the workforce. I keep getting hit up by, you know, insurance companies and, you know, small businesses, like, every week, like, hey, I saw your LinkedIn profile, like, you know, you'd fit perfectly with our business plan. Like, you know, hit us up if you ever want to, like, talk shop about, like, what we could do for you. And I'm like, damn, I'm still playing right now. You know, obviously you can take that into coaching still. I have a few buddies that are actually in the real estate business in Vegas. So, like, you know, they've definitely taken their, you know, competitive nature and kind of harnessed that into the market for, you know, real estate, because
I can see that.
Cause obviously, people like to know, like, oh, I'm talking to an athlete. Like, I'm talking to someone who I can, you know, relate, you know, people want to just talk to people that, like, did something before and stuff. Like, I mean, I think that's the reason why Jeter's doing so well in business after, because who's not going to want to endorse Jeter? Like, you know, he's a brand. Like, so definitely. It's almost like at the time he was almost like the Michael Jordan of baseball. So,
I mean, he made a deal. He made a business deal with Michael Jordan. Yeah, and smart. He was saying how it was kind of a risky move because Jordan, the brand, was only basketball.
Yeah.
But like Jeter was saying, he was like, well, if you're going to take a risk with that guy, you know?
Yeah. It's a for sure thing. It's not like, you know, you could have, I don't think you could have picked anybody better to do it because, you know, you're taking one of the biggest athletes like Michael Jordan, and then you're combining it with the biggest, you know, baseball player of that time, at least the most popular, recognizable person around the world.
He killed it. And speaking about brand and what I think Marcus Stroman might be bringing to the Yankees team and all those like full count moments, how I talk about on this podcast with all you guys, you know, full count moments, your pressure moment. I feel like Marcus Stroman stumbled into a situation where he had so much massive pressure, considering some of the negative comments he said about the Yankees when he was on the Mets, and then some of the expectations that people had for Marcus Stroman for the Yankees, you know, being on the Yankee team as brand new. And I think I've been enjoying watching him. I'd like to hear from someone like you, a professional baseball player who's also a pitcher. What are your thoughts on him? I mean, I think you wanted to call it like highlight of the week as far as pitcher goes, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a few guys on that list. I mean, Marcus Stroman obviously has done a great job like in his first two starts with the Yankees. I mean, talk about like expectations, right? Like you were saying, like he's going to the New York Yankees. Like not many people go there like right off the gate and do well. Like, you know, Joey Gallo didn't have that down that quickly. So, and then some people just can't handle it. Like, you know, that's
they're tough.
Those lights, fans, the lights, dude. Yeah, the pinstripes, the fans, they'll eat you alive. But I think Marcus Stroman fits that mold of like, you know, he embraces the pressure, I think, and he does a good job of, you know, handling himself, because he's a big like, yeah, bring it on kind of guy. Like he's a small pitcher, but he's got like.
And how small are we talking about? Because I mean, he is small. I mean, he even looks small on TV for a pitcher.
Oh, geez, I think he's like 5'10". I think maybe
shorter than that.
Yeah, I mean, and he doesn't throw like 98 miles an hour. He throws 90, 92 with a good like slider, cutter, changeup combo. I mean, he pitches like he throws 98 miles an hour though. You know, he's had a really good start. Shane Bieber's had a really good start, and then, but he's hurt now. He had like 12 innings, 20 strikeouts. So like he was on a really hot streak.
Yeah, I could appreciate about him being so, you know, confident, but the fact that, you know, when he's doing well, striking out people, he's also still doing that dance, that shuffle.
Strikes, two outs, runner on first. 85 pitches for Stroman here in the top of the fifth.
Swing and a miss.
Pitch way off the plate on the outside part. So for Toronto.
I find that like, okay, I mean, this guy's feeling really comfortable and at home to be able to have that ability to go into it.
Like I actually say this a lot. It's almost like him and Bauer kind of have the same kind of look, same style. Like they strut, they like, yeah, like I'm the big guy, like, you know. And
deciding to watch.
Yeah, no, he's fun to watch, especially like if he's on a roll. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Stroman threw a no-hitter. Like, I wouldn't be so surprised. He's honestly always been kind of under the radar. But he's always done really well. Like nobody's really like really given him credit. But you know, he's definitely a big step up from, you know, having Gerrit Cole not be there. I mean, once Gerrit Cole comes back healthy, it'll be a good 1-2 punch for sure.
I was excited for Gerrit Cole, and then I think it wasn't spring training, he got hurt, right?
Yep.
It sucked, but luckily they got Stroman. And before we transition to the next player. Why do you think they let him keep the do-rag? Considering, like I was just saying, Alex Verdugo had to chop off the beard. Now he's limited to one chain. But Stroman still gets to keep that do-rag. I've never seen a Yankee have a do-rag as a pitcher or in general.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think it's kind of a comfortability thing. Like, I think he probably sat down with the owner and the manager, Boone, and just like, hey, listen, I'm
take all it or leave it.
But I need this. Like, I need, like, that's kind of like my, that's kind of like what I'm going for. I don't know. Maybe it's just a comfort, like I said, a comfortability thing. Like, he needs that to pitch well, like, feel mentally ready. I mean, it's working.
Definitely. Yep.
We're talking about pitching, and then we're looking at hitting on the other side, which okay. Mookie Betts is on a tear right now. Obviously not surprising, because considering, like, you know, he's an MVP before. Right. And, you know, I think now it's the team is so loaded that he actually doesn't feel – he doesn't feel as much pressure, because he knows that the guy behind him can help him. It's like, hey, okay. I don't need to do too much. I just have to hit and whatever. Like, you know, and that's just the thing. Like, if you're in a good, comfortable, you know, setting and stuff, like, you kind of embrace it. And even if you have a bad day, it the next day you're going to come back and do just fine. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think when you're at that high caliber of a player like he is, mm-hmm. with all the MVPs before and the glove and whatnot, the ability to, like, put the pressure down and be comfortable, I think that's when you can really, you know, accelerate overall probably. And speaking of another player, he's not very tall either. It's pretty funny when we're talking about the smaller guys and they're killing it. Mookie mm-hmm. Betts, I think, is only 5'8", too.
Oh yeah. But both play big. They
right. You know,
I love watching him play. I mean, I like watching the Dodgers play in general. I mean, they too, just
trust me.
You know, Ohtani, you know, every time Ohtani's up at bat, you're just like, okay, what's gonna happen? He could hit a bomb, he can hit a 3-run double, like, what's going on? I keep saying this, I don't think if the Dodgers don't make it that far, I'm gonna be so disappointed.
That'd be bad, dude.
I'm gonna be so disappointed, and that's crazy. I mean, and they should do well, and Kershaw's hurt too, I think, right?
I don't know about that. Is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that sucks, dude.
I mean,
again, though, really? I mean,
yeah, but
this is his last year, probably.
Yamamoto had a good start today, so that's good.
I saw that.
Yeah,
and he did good the previous game too.
Oh, did he? I didn't watch that start.
He did pretty good. I mean, what was it? In spring training, he only did one inning, I think.
Yeah, and then he gave up like 5 runs in like one inning.
Yeah, but I mean, he's coming back to terms and doing well.
Yeah.
So, no, Mookie Betts, for sure.
Another guy who's actually doing really well right now is Tyler O'Neill with Boston.
I don't know. Which position?
Huh?
What position is he?
He's an outfielder, actually. Okay. Tyler O'Neill's hitting really well. And then also, you know, Will Smith from the Dodgers. I mean, you know, he just signed a big contract, and, you know, he's worth every penny so far. But it's early. I mean,
it's very early to predict in a way.
Did you see the recent injury or the MRI with Spencer Strider? Did you see that?
No, I didn't really see no. What's going on? Tommy John?
I think something wrong with his elbow. I mean, I'm not sure specifically, but it should be, they're going to find out more information later. But that's just another hit to the Braves. I mean, that's something that team does not need right now.
Why are all these pitchers constantly getting hurt? Is it because the game has now, you know, shortened a little bit? Is that why, you think? I mean, you speaking as a pitcher, what do you think?
Okay. So, going back to the clock, the you know, the pitching clock, someone just posted, like, I think it was on the news, saying like, oh, the clock should be taken away because it's leading to injuries. I think you're putting so much wear and tear on the arm so much quicker that if you think about it, like a guy who's cruising, he's throwing like 100, 110 pitches,
right?
And sometimes he takes like a minute in between pitches sometimes, especially if he's in a jam, like he's trying right. to settle down. He's like, da, da, da. But now he's cutting that time almost in half or 12 seconds or whatever the time is. And yeah. And now it's like you have to, now people are probably changing their training programs because now it's like, it's not a marathon anymore. It's a sprint. Like they got to go, go, go. Like it's, you know, it's like you have to do more interval training. I think some people aren't used to that yet. I mean, like guys who work fast, like I work fast, so it doesn't really affect me that much, but mm-hmm. you know, bullpen arms should be okay, but starters, it can take a toll.
Right. Well, that's a bit concerning considering all the players that have been hurt. Mm-hmm. And then the future of all these pitchers. So I guess we'll have to see. But no, I think it's going to be very exciting to watch the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Braves. What other team out there is pretty exciting? The Orioles have been doing good. Yeah, they've been better than I expected. Clayton
Burns. I watched his opening day. That was impressive.
Right.
I mean,
go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
How about them Angels though?
Honestly, the Angels are doing a lot better than I thought right. they would. Like right. when I saw they were like 4-2, I was like, wait, what? Like they won 4 games already? Like,
okay. Yeah. But they still ended up losing. Was it last night, I think, to the Red Sox? It was an exciting game. I don't know if you got to see it.
Oh, no, I haven't.
It was a pretty good game.
Angels are in second place. They're 4-3. Texas Rangers are 6-2. I mean, it's all the teams that you're seeing. But Pittsburgh is 7-2 right now.
Wow.
That was a – I did not see that coming.
Right. I mean, so, they're at the – they were expected to – I mean, they're probably still expected to be at the very bottom, right? Or not anymore. Has it changed?
I mean,
after that,
St. Louis is not doing great. I mean, they're 5-4, and Cincinnati is 5-3. I mean, everybody's kind of like pretty much everybody's in that 5-3, 6-4 range kind of thing. Right. So,
when do things change though? Like, when during the season do you actually, in your opinion, do you actually start to see like who's actually probably going to do well?
Probably after the All-Star break.
Okay.
That's when, obviously, people start to, you know, separate more. I mean, also, you know, guys coming back from injuries, some guys start getting hotter. I mean, some people have amazing second halves. I mean, some guys have really good first halves, and then they slow down. I mean, like, watch the guys that are in the Home Run Derby. Like, the guys that enter the Home Run Derby, they probably won't. I mean, some struggle a little bit after the Home Run Derby because their swing changes drastically.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I mean, the season's still very young. I mean, they just started. I mean, I don't think there's any undefeated teams anymore.
I think for the next podcast episode, it'd be cool to talk to you about this, especially because you're going back into the Mexico League when mm-hmm. in May?
Yeah, May. I was actually just talking to my agent and owner of the team today. They're kind of struggling right now. They like lost some guys, and the owner's kind of trying to like feel me out to see like when I would, you know, get there. But
like sooner than later.
Yeah. But I told him the situation, you know, with my family, and I just want to, you know, emphasize on that. And he understands. I mean, he's been very nice, and like, talk about like the owner being in your corner. Like he, you know, he's
that's cool.
He's been pretty much solid for me. So, cause like I said, I keep my nose down. I do everything they ask me to do. I don't ask for much. I mean, it's, you know, if you kind of do what you're told, I mean, cause you're getting paid pretty decent money to go and play for them. So, you know,
right.
There's really no wiggle room to like, hey, I need this, you know, you know,
well, I want to find out, and we'll talk about it on the next podcast. Cause I want to go in depth on this and see mm-hmm. what you say. I want to know if you're going to have the ability to see him, play against him, or, you know, I don't know, come across him somehow during the league. or at least maybe some of your friends, Trevor Bauer, because isn't he in the Mexico League now?
Yeah, so he's with Mexico City. I believe he's with Mexico City still. Okay.
Look into that so we can go into that.
Yeah, well, I'll let you know. I mean, he might be gone by the time I get there, but I actually I have a friend with Mexico City that's on the team, so I can ask. I'll text him and say, "Hey, how is Bauer doing?"
Yeah, because he did pretty good against the pitching against the Yankees, but that was the minor league team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the only guy that was on there on that team that was any worth Stan? Anything was Stanton.
Yeah.
And he struck him out.
I mean, Stan keeps striking out. He's been freaking terrible, dude. I think he made a home run today, though.
Okay, that's good.
I think he finally did. So did
Judge.
Yeah. But yeah, this was good, man. I'm glad we got to do this. Let's talk about Trevor and some other things on the next one.
So. Okay. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you.
All right. I think my beautiful wife just put our son down for sleep. So he slept back-to-back nights throughout the night. So we're hoping that he keeps on doing that.
Well, we'll get off so that he doesn't hear us or you.
He doesn't hear us. Okay.